Shabbat Shalom. This week's parasha is Ki Tavo, which means when you come in, and it covers Deuteronomy 26, 1 through 29, 9. In chapter 26, Moses is giving El Elyon, God Most High's command for the offering of first fruits and tithes to be carried in once they cross the Jordan River into Israel, to the promised land. All that they ever had and will have comes from Adonai, as it is with us also. In the previous parasha, Moses had just reminded the nation of the laws God commanded them to keep. This was a good time for Israel to be reminded of his gracious gift of the promised land. And the Israelis are expected to give back to him the first fruits, their produce and their tithes, as an expression of thankfulness for his goodness. We should also note that it doesn't say some fruit or last fruit, but it says first fruit. The Lord deserves better than our leftovers, although I like leftovers. Brothers and sisters, this would be a good time for us to think about whether we give the Lord our best or just our leftovers with regard to our time, our talent, and our treasures. Proverbs 22:9 says, "He who is generous will be blessed, for he gives some of his food to the poor." And Proverbs 28:27 says, "He who gives the poor will never lack, but he who shuts his eyes will have many curses." Yeshua said, "Give and it will be given to you. They will pour into your lap a good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over. For by your standard of measure, it will be measured against you." From Luke. The Lord blesses us every day, so let's be sure our hearts are in the right place when we come here on Shabbat, actually every day, and offer him our tithes and our worship, praying and singing praises to him. Of course, you have to be in here to do that. As we continue in chapter 26, the Jewish people are about to enter the land, and they will be required to give their tithes and their first fruits. But there is another kind of tithe that they are to give on the third year. In that special tithing year, in addition to giving to the Lord, they are also to give to the Levites. Did I tell you I am a Levite? Just in case you wanted to know. Also to the fatherless and to the widow, so that they too can eat and be filled. When Adonai gave this command to the Israelis, he reminds them of his faithfulness, their deliverance out of Egypt, and the provision of fruitful land as an inheritance. Moses concludes in chapter 26 with the admonition from God to always obey these statutes and ordinances. By Israel's agreeing to follow these laws, Adonai declares them to be his people and his treasured possession. He says that they are to be holy, which means to be set apart to accomplish his special purposes. In chapter 27, Moses instructs the Jewish people to set up large stones coated with wet plaster and to write the words of the law on them, and then to make burnt offerings. Moses again announces that when they cross into the promised land, they are to divide the tribe so that on Mount Gerizim, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Joseph, and Benjamin are to stand and represent the promised blessings God will give Israel if they follow all his commands. And on Mount Ebal, the tribes of Reuben, Gad, Asher, Zebulun, Dan, and Naphtali are to stand and represent the curses that will follow if they disobey the commands of God. The Lord pronounces 6 blessings and 12 curses. Cursed is anyone who makes a false idol. Cursed is anyone who dishonors his father or his mother. Cursed is anyone who moves his neighbor's boundary stone. Cursed is anyone who lies with his father's wife. Cursed is he who lies with his sister. Cursed is he who lies with his mother-in-law. Cursed is anyone who strikes his neighbor in secret. Cursed is anyone who accepts a bribe to strike down an innocent person. And finally, cursed is anyone who does not confirm the words of this law by doing them. And then the last curse covers the rest of the 613 laws. After each one of these curses, the Israelis were to respond, "Amen," meaning they agreed to do them. In chapter 28, Adonai announces what will befall the Jewish nation in the centuries to come. The prophecies foretold the time when Israel would be governed by kings and the idol worship that would take place, as well as the captivities that would result from Israel's faithlessness. There is also a performance clause, so to speak. The blessings were conditional on the people keeping all of his commands. Now, those who believe in replacement theology argue that since Israel didn't follow the 613 commands, that they forfeited their eternal right to the land. But if the replacement theologians would have read more carefully, they would realize that the generations that failed to live up to God's command would receive the curse, and the remnant who repented would always receive their inheritance. Also, replacement theologians overlooked the fact that of the covenant of the land in Genesis 17 was unilateral, completely apart from Israel's performance, meaning that for a time, Israel might not enjoy occupancy of the land due to their disobedience, but he would never, ever change the name on the deed of ownership. There are no surprises for God. He sees everything we do even before we do it. And in Ezekiel 37:12, God announced that we would be restored to the land, even calling it your own land. In chapter 29, we see that the Lord had not given Israel eyes to see or ears to hear, meaning that in their unbelief to comprehend that it was through faith that they received his mercy and forgiveness, not by their works. Ephesians 2:8-9 echoes this, "For it is by grace that you have been saved through faith. And this is not from yourselves, it is a gift of God, not by works, so that no one may boast." Also in Ephesians, Paul also declares that Adonai chose us before the creation of the world, saying, "In love he predestined us to be as adopted as sons through Messiah Yeshua, to the praise of his glorious grace." Brothers and sisters, it is always the Lord that draws us to himself. And unless God transforms us into his disciples, we will not have eyes to see or ears to hear. It is interesting to note that with the exception of Reuben, who committed a great sin with Jacob's concubine, one of those curses we read about earlier, and Zebulun, all the tribes on Mount Gerizim would be the sons of Leah and Rachel, whereas the sons of the maidservants would stand on Mount Ebal for the curses. Also, the curses reiterate 6 of the 10 commandments. Let me share some closing thoughts. Some people notice that there are only 6 blessings compared to 12 curses in the parasha. But God knew Israel would prove to be disobedient and the curses would befall them more than the blessings. He wanted his people to learn to trust him, even in retrospect and through the pain of judgment and exile. But in fact, Yeshua gave us 8 additional blessings known as the Beatitudes, not based on our works, but by his grace. In Matthew 5, Yeshua declared, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they would be comforted. Blessed are the gentle, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. And finally, blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." Paul tells us in Galatians 3:10 that the law required us to be perfect, But it was humanly impossible. No one was justified by the law. Rather, the righteous live by faith. Adonai's glory is shown through his mercy and his grace. If the law could make us righteous, we would not have a need for the grace. But the Mosaic covenant was meant to be temporary until Messiah would make final atonement for sin. A.W. Tozer once said that a believer, and I should, and I quote, put away all defense and make no attempt to excuse himself, either in his own eyes or before the Lord. Whoever declares himself will have him for his defense, and he will have no other. But let him come defenseless before the Lord, and he will have for his defender no less than God himself. I love that quote. The Lord shows us that we are unworthy and cannot stand on our own merit, but we can stand on the merits of the one and only Yeshua, the Messiah. Brothers and sisters, when we meet our Maker, our only defense will be to have the righteous blood of Yeshua, and it will be sufficient. Amen.